Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today I am joined by a very special guest. If you want to know anything about boating or camping or fishing or the weather or the general basic outdoors, this is the man to talk to you. He's the host of Step Outside on the Seven Network and so much more. It's Paul Burt.
Hey, mate. How are you, buddy?
I'm all good, Paul. And yourself?
Awesome. I'm really, really stoked. You know, this is like a prism type thing. Prism with an M.
Okay.
Is that, you know, not prism. So when I walk into the front there, I'm looking and it's like this little dodgy door, but I walk in and it opens up to an absolute fantasy land.
Well,
this is awesome.
That's what Beer Nuts is all about, is a fantasy land.
It is. It's awesome. I love it. Thank you. Thanks for the invite. Glad to have your company with me and me with you today.
Yes. It's your pleasure. Now, where did the interest in the outdoors come from for you, Paul? What sparked it for you?
I had no choice. You know, we grew up as a young fella. Didn't have a lot back in those days, and still don't because I'm in the media. But you know, it was sitting down by the boat ramp. You know, just I didn't have any fishing line, so I'd find fishing line on the ground and I'd tie knots. So I learned how to tie knots, and then I'd make the bait out of flour and water and use the little floating freshwater reeds because I knew they floated. So that was my float, and I would catch little tiny guppies and silver bitties and clearies and herrings and stuff. And you know, it just excelled from there. My family really loved the outdoors, and we did a lot of boating and grew up. My grandma was on Amity Point, North Stradi, aunties and uncles Facing Island off Gladstone, and then you know, as I got older, we started moving into different areas of fishing and boating and lifestyle.
So it was just as a young lad, it was just all about if you're not outside, you're not doing nothing. So
absolutely, I still agree with that today. You know, I got two boys, so I get them out as much as I can. My youngest is crazy about it. My eldest still loves it, getting out there as well, which is awesome. And so is my wife. But you know, the thing is that I found out is that as we grow, and particularly as I was surfing and fishing, is I'd always look at the skies. You know, I'd see the charts on the TV. And they had like the green screen and the dude, Ray Wilkie, would be up there with a famous tie and he'd be, you know, drawing over the map. And I think, wow, look at that thing. And I eventually learned how to work out that weather scenario myself. And I'd go, yep, next Friday is going to be great. I'm going here, here, or here. And it worked. So now I portray that through the screens to people at home without that scientific look at me, I'm in a suit in a studio. I'd rather be outside and say, hey, this is the real deal.
Yeah, cool. I like it. I like it.
Thanks, mate.
Now, overfishing of our waterways, is it a thing? And if it is a thing, how do we fix it?
Look, it's a good question. We've got over 500 kilometres of canal systems on the Gold Coast, a fabulous place. And I've travelled the world, very, very fortunate to do that, and fish in many places. And what we have here in our backyard is some of the best fishing I've ever experienced. And we have, in Queensland, around 250,000 registered boats. It's the highest amount of capita per area than anywhere else in the Southern Hemisphere here on the Gold Coast. So the influx of people fishing is a lot. You have to change your ways. The fish are still there, but you can't go out there when I was a young kid is drop down a pound of lead with all these hooks and expect to catch a big snapper. Now you've got to go really light, you know, and float the bait down. You've got to tease the fish, even though that, you know, the fish are growing, and they're old fish too these days as well. So I think you've just got to really change with it and think, I'm not the first guy here this morning to fish this reef. There's probably been 40 other boats already here before me, even though you're out there nice and early. So bring it up lighter and you'll catch more fish.
Fair enough. And so you often hear about like the urban legend of a guy throws his rod in and picks out a tractor tire because there's so much shit in the water. Now, firstly, again, is rubbish and pollution, is that a thing? And if it is a thing, how do we fix that?
You know, the funny story here is I was up off it's called the Trench or some bloody thing up off Bundaberg, right? So I was 75 kilometres north of Hervey Bay. I took my father-in-law, Kenny, up there and a mate, and we drove all the way. We got up to this trench area. And we wanted to catch Red Emperor. Middle of nowhere, Goff, and I mean middle of freaking nowhere. Ken drops his line down and I'm pulling up a fish or something and he hooks up and he's an old boy and he's playing, his rod's bending, the boat's leaning up and down with the swell, and he pulls up a pair of red underpants.
Crikey.
Wouldn't say that, wouldn't I? So, you know, but that's what happened. And so pollution, we're in the middle of nowhere. Pollution is the main thing. You may not see it in the water, But the microplastics is going to be a problem, because when you get water, you break it down, you put it under a microscope, there is a shitload of plastic in there that's already broken down over the years, and not to say what's going to happen in the next 50, 100, 200 years. It's going to be, it's bad. So we're doing things about it now.
So is the moral of the story to tell people not to throw crap in the waterways?
Literally, don't have a crap in the waterways and put your undies back on. Well,
you know, I remember, just slightly off topic, but on the same topic.
Yes, sir.
When I was on a cruise ship when I was a young fellow, and I remember my old man saying to me at about 1 a.m, like we did the Pacific Islands around Vanuatu and Fiji and stuff.
Yes.
And I remember my old man saying to me, Come and have a look at this. Now, he thought this was a novelty thing because different generation. And like I was, about 6 or 7 at the time. And at 1 a.m, what they would do is they would literally throw all the rubbish in bags overboard.
I've heard this, right?
That's how they would get rid of their garbage for the day. So we're on the cruise ship and we're watching the staff, the big like black plastic bags that are full of the day's trash.
Yes.
And they just hurl them over the edge into the middle of the Pacific. Now, that absolutely happened because I was there. I saw it happen.
Yep.
So, and he thought that was just, what a wonderful way to get rid of your garbage, because it'll sink to the bottom and it'll be totally fine. But of course, that I believe that would be illegal nowadays.
Oh, for sure.
But that's the kind of thing that we need to now try and clean up, is absolutely, all those years of bad behaviour.
And, you know, and it's hard because, you know, it's trying to, I guess you're not reinventing the wheel or anything like that, but you're also trying to re-educate the older people. And, you know, I guess the younger guys, we know this stuff, and the younger ones coming up are really aware of it. So it is something that, you know, the pollution should be getting back on track, as in, you know, less of it in the ocean, which is what we need.
And so let's talk about crabs, not the kind that makes you itchy downstairs, but the kind that you eat and are delicious.
Yeah.
So if somebody is listening and they're thinking about, you know what, I want to go out and buy some crab pots and throw them in the water and get me a nice tasty dinner.
Yeah.
What would be the first 2 or 3 things that they need to do to make sure that they do catch some yummy crabs?
Okay, look, you know, every state has different laws, and this is something that we with our Step Our Cyber Paul Burt program, is it's you've got to understand that people in Perth, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, everyone has different laws. It is absolutely a mindfuck. So what we have to do there is you turn around, you go, right, check your local laws and rules to understand what's going on. Because if you don't understand it, then you're going to get caught out. If you listen to me, you're going to get caught out. If you're going New South Wales, you can catch a female crab and keep it at the right size. Queensland, you can't.
But what about actually, like, you purchase, is there, I don't know, because I'm literally ignorant on the situation, but is there like certain crab pots that work better, or are all crab pots the same? And do we stick them in at incoming tides or outgoing tides? Like, what's the best way to catch crabs?
Best thing to do is go to Anaconda store. I'm going to promote there because they're my swannos. Love Anaconda. Anaconda! Is that we turn around, and if you have that, you've got to go, all right, you'll add 4 pots, $50. Yep. Cheapest chips. Now, crab's going to cost you, a mud crab's going to cost you $80 a kilo in a shop, so you've already saved money once you catch one. You get fresh mullet, tweed bait, another swanno, going to look after them. So if we get tweed
you're
bait,
a whore,
whole
Paul.
Mullet, I am.
You're a dirty whore.
Hey, you'll be surprised at $10 gets you off. Is that right? So we turn around and we put the mullet in. You've got to face the funnels into the current, right? You don't want to go side on, because the current is going to drag the crabs up and down this freeway, right? And they're not going that way. They're not playing Frogger. So they've got to go into the funnel. So if you help the crab out, you're going to do well. Throughout the day, a lot of people check other people's pots. It's wrong. So I always put my pots out here on the Gold Coast late in the afternoon, like 6 o'clock at night, and I'll check them at 6 in the morning before anyone gets too busy on the thoroughfares, on the waterways. So I do that, and I catch my crabs. Sand crabs, you want to hit the sandy areas, like even down around Adelaide, those sandy areas where the blue swimmers are. The mud crabs are in the tropical areas where there's rock walls and mangroves and mud. And spanner crabs are out in the ocean, and of course lobsters change anywhere around the country.
So is it pretty easy? Like, if you just stick your crab pots in, you have them facing the right direction, it's reasonably straightforward to get yourself a couple of crabs?
Pretty much, mate, yeah. And you've got to have, again, rules and regulations. You've got to have your identification plate on the pot and on the float. So you get that done and you're pretty much sweet on. But realistically, check your local stores and ask the local experts first.
And what about handling the crab? Because obviously we don't want to lose a finger in the claws.
No.
Is there a certain way that...
yes.
Because I'm sure you've been out with people and you're like, oh my God, you're about to lose half your wrist. Like,
yeah, very much.
Like, is there a certain way we pick up the crab?
Absolutely, mate. And the back of the crab, of the carapace, which is the top shell part, you've got his back flippers. You basically put your thumb on one flipper and your index finger on the other flipper, and then you pick him up. He won't swing around and grab you.
Okay. Okay, cool. Now, there's a guy who goes to my gym who's a mad keen fisherman. He goes out, like, I think it's like the 50 fathoms and gets like marlin and stuff. Like,
he's cool.
He's like mad for it, and he fillets it and puts it in the ice chest. Yeah. And he said to me, now, I want to see if this is bullshit or not, right?
Far away.
He reckons that when you catch the fish and you put it in the ice chest and so you take it home, before you cook it, you have to have it out at room temperature for at least half an hour, because if you take it from cold and put it straight on the hot plate, the meat will like seize up and get tough.
Yeah.
And so you need to let it relax in room temperature before you cook it. Is that right?
I tend to, with my fish, I never clean my fish straight away. Okay, I'll gill and gut them if I have to, but I'll keep them in a nice slurry for a day. And on the second day is when I clean them, because it's relaxing the flesh and the meat. Okay, that's what I find. Do you want to pull the fish out of the fridge and then put it on the bench for half an hour? Depends on the heat outside. If it's really bloody hot, then you're not going to, are you? You know, so sort of leave it out for 5 minutes, maybe. So I tend to leave my fish out for a few minutes, you know, 5-10 minutes.
But he is on the right
he's
track.
He's on the right track. But maybe, mate, you know, Goff's neighbour, listen up. Don't clean your fish straight away. If you've got a marlin, chop its head off, chop its tail off, and all the fins. Cut it into sections and just keep it on ice for a day. And on the second day, fillet it, clean it up.
And that's when you cook it and have a delicious feed.
Bloody beautiful.
And is there a right way, like on that same thing, is there a right way to store fish? Like when for people who are, again, novices, is there a right way and a wrong way to store fish to make sure it's delicious?
Absolutely. You know, a cryovac machine is probably the best investment you'll have. You know, I always put mine in the IKEA Ziploc bags because they're cheap, and I'll put them in the fridge. And I've got my Saturday. Caught fish on Saturday, got a big mull away, awesome fishing with my son and a mate, and I clean them up on Sunday, and they're in the fridge in the IKEA bag. Today is Monday, and I don't know if I can put time references on this, but I just did. And then tonight I'm going to cryovac them. Okay. I've already eaten some along the way as well.
Couldn't help yourself, eh? Yeah.
Hell no.
Now, as you said, you do host a show called Step Outside. Now, when you are producing a show like that, there are a mountain of variables. You got weather. If you've got a story, like you say, about catching fish, you don't catch any fish. You know, like, I mean, there are a mountain of variables when you're going to do a show about the outdoors, basically. So how do you work around that? How do you be flexible to make sure that you have your content for the show?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Is that we spent Hervey Bay 3 weeks ago. We got up there. It was blowing 83 kilometre hour winds. It was blowing its absolute boobs off. And that was from the southeast. And we had a northwesterly blowing at about 60 k's. So both days were both windy. But we managed to get across and hit the protected parts of the island. So you go, you still go, but you know where you're getting to is going to be okay. You just got to get there. So we tend to shoot. And when we're up there, we shot, in 2 days, we shot six different segments for six different shows. Then I'll go out and I'll do six different cooking episodes in that one morning. And then we do a lot of stuff. And eventually you've got enough to make six shows. So I tend to time management really well. But I've been involved in a lot of other programs my whole life. And I think I've learned from their mistakes to make mine successful.
So, but you do have to be like flexible, because again, like if it's pissing down with rain, you're like, oh, well, do you have like other ideas in the back of your brain? So it's like, okay, well, if it is raining on one of those days, you know what we could do? We could do a story about such a thing because the rain won't matter.
Absolutely. Raincoats, because our friends at Anaconda turn around and say... Got the new big store opening at Burley here.
Oh, mate, I'm sure it's just the greatest.
I'll look after you. It's on the 11th of December. again, that's probably last week when you get this. Anyway, who cares? They are good. They've got a great array of marmon. They've got a great array of all this beautiful clothing, which is awesome for wet weather.
Am I going to get
you asked the question.
Am I going to get some free gear? Because, I mean, fuckers. I mean, it shouldn't be you just cashing in on this gravy train. Hey?
It's not a gravy train. I eat all my food, mate. There's nothing left on my plate. But no, you know, the thing is, the answer to your question is yes. If it's raining, I turn around and we'll go, let's do a wet weather thing and utilise the product, because they are my spono. And so we look after that stuff for people at home.
But also in life, it rains. So, I mean, if you're out on a boating trip or whatever and it's pissing with rain, then you need to have a plan B when you're on the boat. So we look at Paul Burt's story about what you do when it's pissing with rain.
Absolutely. And the cameraman sits in there and he looks out the window.
And he hates you.
And he absolutely hates me. You know, like, he's in the dryness, I'll be outside. But, you know, we just look at the weather, and if it's dangerous, we don't go. We pull it off. But, we're always on the move, always filming and always getting the right thing. And I guess knowing the coast is that we've got barramundi here, we've got mangrove jacks here, we've got cod, trout. We've got everything here. So you can work that area, or trout, I should say, within a few hours either way of the border, is that you can fish for a whole variety of species really in our own backyard. That's why I love the Gold Coast.
Cool, cool. Now, you have also been a weather presenter, as you mentioned, for a long while. And obviously, with your stuff, you're not a studio dude. You are a live cross kind of man.
Thanks, mate.
So I am just, well, it is what it is. Yeah. So I am curious, obviously, as long as you've been doing it, surely there's been a funny experience or an interesting experience, or when you're in the middle of a live cross, something. Yeah. Is there anything that springs to mind that you could regale us with?
I would have to say, mate, this is off the cuff. So I do recall one we were at Bowen, and I was talking live to a guy called Kevin. I'll never forget his name. And I turned around. It was Cyclone Debbie that came in, Category 4, Category 5, something like that. Anyway.
So it's a big one.
It was a biggie, right? It was a biggie. And I went up, and we were in his little lodge area, which is down on the beach. Now, when I go to these spots, I like getting plonked in the middle of the cyclone, and I'll have a cameraman with me who's generally religious by that stage. and I go to the front, because if you're in the city or in the back area of these towns, all the roofs blow off and they'll land on you, chop your head off, right? So you don't want to be there. I'd rather have a coconut flying at me. So we go to the front where the water is unfortunately surging, but you get into the old, you know, sort of villas and all that sort of stuff there, and you're staying there and it's all concrete bunkers. Anyway, where I feel safe. The water might be up around your knees or waist, but you just get up at high, go on the next level. So anyway, I went to this Kevin. I said, mate, tell me, how are you handling this? And he goes, oh, look, I've heard a few stories of Debbie, you know, doing some nasty things, but finally she's come to Bowen and give me a good blowjob. And it was like live on air. And I'm thinking, holy shit, did he just say that? And I'm thinking, right. And I sort of turned, and the only thing I turned to was the kitchen. And it was like, have a look at the kitchen these guys have got, you know. So it was a very awkward moment that happened. Another one, we were up at Cooktown, and it was a really big one that came in. It was like it wasn't Larry. It was something else, but it was a real big one. And we're in this, again, right on the water. And so it was windy, and we're doing live crosses back to Adelaide and Perth and all these other places. And so from the waist up was a wet weather jacket, and from that down was undies, right? Because we're doing the crosses out on the balcony.
Yeah.
So we'd quickly close the door during the cross when it finished, and inside I had the crew all cooking up chili con carne, the music was blurring, the beers were flowing. It was just a wild night. But it was fun, and then when job came, everyone switched on and doors open, and it was you know, 250 kilometer winds.
It sounds like you kind of have a sick love of being placed in the middle of a tropical cyclone, in the middle of a war zone.
I feel safe with it. I feel okay with it, you know. And it's nice to bring people say, oh, why are you outside in those sort of conditions? We know what it's like. Or why are you out there without an umbrella? Well, you know what? An umbrella, when it's raining, generally you have wind gusts. Byron Bay, not too long ago, 139 k/h during some just normal storm fronts. An umbrella ain't going to last. Okay, it's going to go inside out. So I like to just sort of just say, hey, this is what it's like, and if I can show the pictures back home and people can understand it, then great.
Well, that's actually a question I've not thought of before, because you do have those idiots out there who are like, oh, you're making it dangerous because you're out there and you're all this sort of stuff. Yeah. Is that sort of your response to them? Hey, listen, buddy, I'm just doing a job. I'm just paying the rent just like everybody else.
Oh, there's a lot of people out there, Goff, who really knock you and they'll get in your face. A few tried and a few have failed. But the thing was and a few succeeded too, is that they I just turned around and said, look, you know, I wouldn't come to your place of work and burn down your house that you just built. Don't come to mine and be disrespectful. It's common sense.
No, fair call. Fair, absolutely, man. Absolutely. There's a very funny, it's non-related, but kind of, it's a very funny sketch. I love the D-Generation, the old late show back in the early 90s. And there's a very funny sketch where Tony Martin and Mick Molloy went to other people's works and started heckling them, because they're like, it's not just comedians.
And bring a camera.
Because they're like, you know, comedians, it's the only job where you get heckled.
Yes.
People think it's okay to yell shit out to you when you're on stage.
And a weatherman.
So, yeah. Well, yes. Have you had some funny heckles when you've
I get heckled all the every. I get a lot of people are really nice, but then you get that one knob who just turns around and says something that just grates you the wrong way.
I really do.
Absolutely. And you're thinking, man, come on. But I mean, I think if you go to a comedian and you sort of heckle them, you're like, oh, you know, throw something or whatever. But no, weathermen, they're generally a little bit more distasteful.
Oh, really? There's no humorous comments? No one has a bit of a sense of humor?
Oh, there are humorous ones, absolutely. Like, there's some there that just there's a few naughty ones that I won't mention that go around, and there's a couple that have turned up on the YouTube that people, if someone's grabbed the microphone and said it, drop the microphone and run off. And I'm waiting for another one of those times. Someone that grabbed the mic and I'd probably just hand it to them actually and say, here you go, and then just get out of place.
It's producer's problem there, man.
Absolutely. I'm on a holiday now.
All right. Well, that does bring us to the end of this episode of the Beer Nuts Project. Thank you so much for coming in, Paul. Any other sponsors you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, really? You're going to ask that question?
Well, I mean, how about you promote yourself for a change? Okay, where can people learn more about Paul Bird?
Well, look, you know, thank you, firstly. I really appreciate your time. It's been absolute fun for me. So Step Outside with Paul Bird, it's on every weekend around this beautiful country of ours on 7Mate. A new episode gets dropped every Sunday. We're running a whole new episode every Sunday all the way through to the end of 2022, and then a few years after that, which is good. So it's the second highest, near on highest rating show for 7Mate on the fishing, which is
cool.
Great. Yeah,
it's cool.
And also, mate, just do that. Saturday you'll see it. Jump on 7+, type in Step Outside and you'll catch up.
And social media for you, Paul Bird?
Mate, Step Outside with Paul Bird, hashtag whatever that is, you know, Insta, Facebook, crap. Fuck, I don't know. Mate, my missus does all that. She's me. She's so good. She's my rock. My co-owner, director, you know,
what do you want
media
to give,
writer.
You want to give her a shout out? What's her name?
Oh, Alyssa. She's awesome. She's 10 out of 10. She's a co-owner and writer, director, everything. She works the whole lot.
Ah, well, lucky you.
Yeah, so, absolutely, mate. You've got to have a real good team in this, I tell you what.
I mean, all I've got, Scott in the other room.
Scotty's not a bad-looking bloke, mate. You've done all right there, I tell you. So, you know.
Just needs to have a shave occasionally.
Nah, now, look, turn it up, Scotty.
Now, look, I'm only teasing. Scotty's wife's upstairs. She's very upset now. So she's just learnt something that she didn't need to learn. So, look, this does bring us to the end of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment, rate and review. 5 stars is always good. And, of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, Anaconda, until next time, we will speak to you then. Go on.
Anaconda! Surtees, Yamaha, Sanyong. I'll get out of here.
All right. Talk to you next time.
Thanks, mate.
Did you get that, Scott? Cool, man. All right.
Did you get that?
That's it.